Let's welcome our main speaker, D.H.
Hi, my name is Dee and I'm an alcoholic. And I'd like to thank Chuck for the honor of asking me to speak. It's an honor. My first birthday party in AA when I was brand new was Chuck's 10-year party. And I think I was the only one who didn't laugh. I didn't have a sense of humor then. And Clancy did the party and everyone was having a good time. And I was embarrassed. I thought, how could anybody say these things? And today, when I go to parties, I love to hear Clancy give a party. I really do. So, that's one of the things that changed. One of the things I didn't plan on it. Many things have changed, which were things that I didn't want to change. Or I was perfectly, happy with the way things were. Anyway, I have to listen to the speakers, the 10-minute speakers, and I identify with quite a bit with Nancy. I'm a teacher too, and I ditched today. So I'm also doing it tomorrow. as everybody said, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now, which is very easy. Or, this mind, because it's chronological order, and it's one way of keeping things straight. Let's see, my background, I'm Polish Catholic, and there's a Russian there, and, there were drinkers in our family. I had an uncle on each side. One just disappeared, and then the other one at Christmas time he was drunk at every family function, but when it was at his house, he'd be standing in the laundry room where the alcohol was pouring drinks, and we'd go in there and he'd start to cry and tell us how much he loved us, And, my first idea of alcohol, and of course my parents said, he's drinking too much again, and it was a bad thing. That was my first idea. I came from a very loving family, too. My parents, there were only two of us, thank goodness, and so there was more to go around to two than, say, to six. Did everything for my sister and myself. They really wanted a family, and they wanted the best for us, and we did a lot of things together. And one of the things that when I hear about dysfunctional families, I think the only way mine was dysfunctional was there were a lot of shouldn'ts. You shouldn't feel that way. You shouldn't, think that. And I always got the idea I was wrong. There was something wrong with me because I did. I just stopped telling them how I felt because I didn't want them to think there was something wrong with me, that I was wrong in my thinking. I also remember feelings of inadequacy and just being confused, let's see, we were Catholic, and I went to Catholic school for a few years, makes me a cradle Catholic, which I heard means you got it before the age of reason, and I got a D in religion when I was in second grade, I guess I had a lot of confusion about God from the very beginning. Anyway, back to my family. When I first got sober, I made amends to my parents. That was one of the things I had to do. So I made amends, and I told them how sorry I was for putting them through all that. And my father just said, please don't do that. We love you so much. We're just, so happy that you have found, something that might make you better. He knew how confused I was, and he knew that I had a lot of problems, problems in relationships and attitudes and things like that. And he knew I would have a hard time in life, I guess. So when I left home, he gave me a toolbox. You're going to be on your own, kids, so you're going to have to fix things by yourself. In fourth grade, I went to a public school, and I had a girlfriend, and she did everything I couldn't do. She could talk, she could laugh, she could make friends, and I clung to this girl. I thought she would make me something. I felt so good being around her. I never felt that I was enough just the way I was, but if she was my best friend, that made me okay. We went all the way through college together. We drank together and everything. And we're talking about, many years later. About 2 years ago, I went to see her in Michigan, where I'm from. And I got there with my sister about 5 o'clock, and she was drinking out of a styrofoam paper cup in a very nice house, 2 children, a nice husband. And when I finally went to bed at 2 o'clock, she was still drinking, So I guess when I was in fourth grade, I could seek out the fellow alcoholic, my antennae were up, and I started drinking when I was in high school, about 14 or 15 years old, and always had feelings of being, uncomfortable with people and not knowing what to say. And one of my big concerns through life was, how do I look? Do I look okay? Am I saying the right things? And what will they think? What will people think? And consequently, I find myself able to do very little because I'm always thinking about, what are you thinking about me? And I had a very, miserable high school. I did well. I did drink, and I remember my first drink at a party, and suddenly I was all right. I didn't, break out and dance and do wild things and take off my clothes. I just kind of sat in the corner, and I thought, this is it, just totally comfortable, It just went right through my body, and everything was relaxed. And the only sad part about that episode is that there wasn't enough. Right from the beginning, I could not control my drinking. Whenever it was around, I always drank as much as I could. And after that, I kind of knew right from the beginning that, I had to drink and go for the end. I had to go till I was passed out. I could not stop after one or two. And if there were only, it was only a little bit to go around, I would rather not drink. I went to college and did a lot of drinking in the latter part. My sister was in a sorority when she was in college. She was older, and so I assumed, of course, that I would get in because having a sister in a sorority, you have like a legacy, and it's it's an automatic in. Where I had been to a couple of the parties that they had there, and I was always drunk. I was so uncomfortable, wondering if I was going to, do and say the right thing, and what were people thinking, And I just kept drinking, and I just always got drunk. One New Year's Eve, I was at a party in a basement, and I had first time I had slow gin, and I didn't realize it had any secrets or anything. And at midnight, as I went to kiss my date, the mystery of slow gin, revealed itself, and my date kind of threw his head to the side, but it was a little too late, and he caught a little, and I ran upstairs, and the house was all white, and I decorated it with a bit of color here and there, and then I don't remember anything else about the evening. And I didn't get in a sorority because they wanted to, I guess, pick girls who had potential to become ladies. And I wasn't showing any of that at all. I finished college, but barely. I got a fake ID before I was 21, of course, and started taking classes around my drinking nights. And because I knew I was going to wake up hungover or not feeling that great. And like I said, I barely graduated. I majored in French, and I don't know why, except there was something when I got out of high school. I had seen some French movies, and I thought, that's what I want to do. I want to go to France, and I want to live in Paris, and, I'll be somebody then. And, something on the outside was going to fix it. My father suggested that I go into teaching, and, I thought, well, why not? I don't know what else to do. So I did that. Those were in the late 60s when I think the hippies were kind of going on the out, but they were still there. And there were hippies at our school, but I did not identify with them at all. I mean, I wanted to be a cool jet setter, and I liked to take showers, and I liked clean underwear. And so I associated drugs with hippies, and I never took drugs, just was not a drug taker. When I got out of college, my father got transferred to Los Angeles. And so I came out here. I had made a couple trips to Paris because I was majoring in French, and didn't drink at all while I was there in college. When I came to Los Angeles, I discovered a bar in the Marina called Donkin's, and for the next about 7 years, that was my bar of choice. I think I saw it go through two or three architectural changes. I was a groupie. I taught in Arcadia, and I was living in Pasadena, and I would drive out to Donkin, say, two or three times a week and drive home drunk on the Pasadena freeway. And many times I would open my eyes, and there was a curve, and I was going straight. Or I'd pull into my driveway, and I didn't remember getting there. I decided the best thing to do, let me move to the Marina. I'll drive sober in the morning. So I drove 40 miles to work each way just to be in the Marina, because I thought, it was going to happen there, whatever it was. I thought, I would meet him. I would sail away on a boat. I don't know. But my fantasy life was very strong, a very strong motivator for me to do these things. And so I did. Anyways, I taught school in Arcadia for 3 years. And by the end of that, the last year before they knew I was quitting, the principal asked me not to show so many movies. On the nights that I drank, the kids were always seeing movies the next day, I don't know, they gave me the movie list, and it just worked out, and I just thought, hey, this is great, I wasn't much of a teacher then. I didn't really, didn't get into lesson plans or, take an interest in the kids. I mean, how could I take an interest in anyone but myself? I was so terribly unhappy. And for no particular reason, I had a job, I was working, my parents were good loving people, I was able to pay my bills, and there was really no reason, but it was all on the inside. And I had enough of teaching, I thought, I'm not meeting him, life is too slow, I want to be a jet setter and all that. And I had absolutely no tools to do any of that stuff with. The things that I have learned in Alcoholics Anonymous about myself, that wasn't me. That's just not the type of person that I am. And actually today I'm glad I never had that life, and I wouldn't want it. But that came much later. It was a large reason for my drinking. Just the, unhappiness and the misery. I left teaching, and I worked as a secretary for a while. I did go to Paris and spent a lot of money there and stayed there for about 7 months, and it didn't do it, I was glad to get back home, but what I liked about being there was that I could, I didn't know anybody there, I didn't have any friends there really, and I could get a hotel room and I could just drink. And, walk around the streets and pretend I was somebody, and, I had money to spend, and just kind of live this fantasy life. Meanwhile, in my head is also thinking that, well, everyone back home is saying, oh, she's in Paris, she's got to be having a good time, you know. And I wasn't. I was very miserable. And but, you know, once again, let them think I'm having a good time. Let them please not see me the way I really am, how unhappy I am. When I came back, I went to my mother had opened a deli in Michigan. She wanted to move back there. And I had a very bad attitude. I tried to drink. We lived together, and I tried to drink, and she was always talking to me about my drinking. But I kept doing it anyway. And, you know, in a delicatessen, what did you do but, you know, slice lunch meat? And these people would come in, and it was our business, and it was new, and, you know, it was my parents' money, and, you know, I'd be hungover, and I'd look at these people, and I'd say, what do you want, you know, and they'd look and look, and I'd think to myself, geez, if you don't decide soon, you're not going to get anything, you know. And I just, you know, had a real bad attitude. I didn't, you know, didn't care about my parents. All I cared about was me. One thing I have to go back and mention, I forget this, and it's just an indication, I guess maybe it's a denial, because it does play a large part in my drinking, and that's when I was 10 years old, I became diabetic, and that was another thing that made me feel very different. I used to have an aunt, when we would go over to their house, she would take me over to the side and whisper, I got you some diet soda. And I think, oh, there's something wrong, you know. I mean, it's not a thing that you talk about, you know. She's whispering about it. And I was very thin, so I was on this high-calorie diet, and I would have to take a lunch and buy the school lunch. And so I would sit down with the kids and open up my brown bag and eat my inch of bologna, and they would all laugh, you know. Couldn't take it, you know. I mean, I was ashamed of being diabetic. It was, you know, tremendous denial. And so I, you know, went to the bathroom and I ate my sandwich and I come back and, you know, eat with the rest of the kids. But that was another thing that just made me feel very different and, you know, like I had to hide things. Okay, let's see, I left at, Los Angeles and drinking. I came back to Los Angeles from Paris and took a job as a secretary, and I thought, you know, this is going to be fine. Well, it wasn't. It wasn't fine at all. I was already being, you know, a daily drinker, and I was drinking to pass out, and I had my nights that I went to the bar and things like that, but this wasn't it. So, of course, I, you know, changed jobs. And, you know, I wasn't going to drink on this job. I was, you know, going to get there. Well, I always got there on time. There was a strong work ethic in my family. But the job didn't change it either. And my drinking, you know, progressed. My attitude got worse. And I remember when I first started the last job I had as a secretary, they would ask, oh, what are you going to do this weekend? And I'd say, well, maybe go out, maybe have a drink. And, you know, a few months later, what are you going to do? Oh, go out, you know, have a few drinks. And by the time I got sober, I was saying, get drunk. What else is there to do? You know, there was nothing. I found nothing that made me happy. And one Sunday afternoon in my bar, I was walking around. I was very comfortable. I was already going to this bar on my own, you know. And this guy that I hardly knew, I had just seen him in there, and he just looked at me and he said, are you drunk again? And I couldn't say anything. I was drunk, you know. The mind worked. I mean, the mind clicked to attention immediately, and I wanted to say something, but I couldn't, you know. And I just kind of, you know, walked right by, and I just died, because I thought, how does he know? You know, how could they tell? I will. I mean, I just saw myself. I always tried to get home before I passed out. And how did this guy know? You know, what was I doing? And that kind of put me into drinking alone now. I was had a roommate, and she bought the booze and I drank it. You know, we used to sit around and drink. Now, I don't even know if this girl is living today, because she got sober, it didn't work, then she got deeply into drugs, and I just kind of lost track of her. But now, she was somebody I would think was an alcoholic, you know, because she started drinking the minute she woke up and, you know, just kept at it. Well, I didn't think I was an alcoholic. You know, I knew I had a drinking problem, though, because on the different trips I made to Paris, I kept a travel diary that I took with me all the time. And on one occasion, I made a list there of the things why I should stay. And on the list were all the resentments I had against people, all the sad parts of my life, all the, you know, things that I could look forward to if I stayed there. But also on that list, I had put drinking. When I was back working in an office, we had a given little like calendars for the year, these little diaries or whatever. And one year I thought I'd keep track of my drinking, and I started, you know, writing, drinking, you know, went out with so-and-so, drinking, you know. And after 2 weeks, I looked at it, and I thought, my God, what are people going to think if they get a hold of this, you know? So I changed to shorthand. I thought, you know, this will fool them, you know. Well, I kept that up for about 4 months, and then I just thought, oh, do you forget it, you know? It seemed hopeless, you know, I was a drinker. And never thought of stopping. The remainder of my drinking was mostly coming home from work and getting drunk, passing out, waking up the next day, saying I will never drink again, getting to work with the shakes, coming home, standing in front of the icebox, drinking, passing out, and doing the same thing, you know, night after night and week after week, and, you know, in the morning promising myself this weekend I'll do this, and I never did it, you know. I just, it just never happened to me. After one drunk party, when many of us were laying around on the floor the next morning, a friend of mine who was there, I wish I could remember her name, but she had been in AA, and she asked me if I wanted to go to an AA meeting. Well, I couldn't even get a cup of coffee to my lips, and I said, yeah, you know, and I thought, well, that's cool, you know, she drinks, so it's okay, you know, it's, you know, place for people who drink, you know, AA or whatever, you know, to get a handle on it. And I remember going to, she wasn't a, you know, sober alcoholic, but she made an attempt. She took me to, I think, 4 meetings, not the 10 I think you're supposed to. But we were at this one meeting talking to this woman who was 9 years sober, and I just looked at her and said, you know, why would you want to do that? You know, why would you want to stay sober for 9 years? I couldn't, you know, the drinking was all I knew. It was my entire life. And it was the only thing that made me comfortable. I don't know, you know, I thought really that it was some kind of a joke. There was a trick here. There was, you know, something written where it's okay that you drink sometimes, you know, and this was during the gas rationing, and I thought, well, maybe they didn't like the license plates because people just don't live without drinking. I didn't stay sober, you know, but I had heard enough, and that was like June of 1974, and then in about September or October of 1974, this friend of mine who I used to drink with and who I saw sober one time at a party at my house, because she had joined AA, called me and asked me if I wanted to go to an AA meeting. She had come back into this area and she had found this, you know, great group. And I said, well, all right, you know, because I couldn't handle it anymore. I wanted to stop to physically get clean, and I knew it was killing me because of my diabetes and that, and I just wanted to get a handle on it. And we went to, of course, we came to the Pacific Group meetings, and it was so different than the meetings I had gone to before. The meetings I went to at other places, I just kind of sat there, and you know, everybody had their little people they were talking to. No one, I think one guy in all the four meetings came up and said hi, and tried to share a little bit of his program, and that was it. And my first meeting here, and you know, my arm almost fell off from shaking people's hands, and you know, I'm a paranoid, and everybody's looking at me, and you know, then all of a sudden they're calling me by my name, and it's, what do you want from me? You know, why do you know my name so suddenly? And I liked it, but I was afraid of it. That was in October, and I remember I heard Clancy talk, and everybody was laughing, and I couldn't think of what was so funny. You know, it just wasn't that funny to me. And things have changed, of course. But I didn't stay sober. I went to meetings and I came home and drank. I thought, well, this is good, you know. I won't start drinking at, 6 o'clock. I'll start drinking at 10, you know, and I'll have a few quick shooters and get to bed, you know. I didn't hear in that period of time that, you know, you won't die from lack of sleep. Anyway, I, from the group pressure, you know, are you going to get a sponsor? Are you going to get a sponsor? And, you know, I'm the type of person I like to check things out, which I did. And, I decided what I could do and, that, you know, if I found a sponsor who was willing to do what I wanted to do, which was actually quite a bit. I mean, I went to 5 meetings, I went to the yard, I did all the activities. But it worked out where the sponsor I got was a woman who's in the group, Marilyn, and she was very kind and gentle. And she spoke to an area in me that really needed healing, and that was, you know, the spiritual background, giving me information and telling me that I was loved, and I felt so unloved, I felt so unworthy. And for no particular reason, because I was not that bad. I wasn't, you know, I mean, by normal standards, I wasn't a real bad drinker, and I didn't do, you know, things that, you know, were terribly offensive. It's just I was so miserable, and I had high expectations, and I wasn't achieving anything. But anyways, she was my sponsor, and I would call her every day, and I would cry. I don't know where the tears came from, but I would just cry and cry. And at least that's what it seemed like to me. I was lucky. One thing about, you know, my drinking, I held it together quite well at work, because the month I got sober, I also got promoted in my job. And I had my own office, and so therefore I could cry before I was in this big open space, you know. So that worked out real well. I did all the things that the, you know, the group wants you to do, and that's, you know, shake hands and go to meetings and go to the yard and go on the move. And I did it for 30 days, and I thought, well, 30 more, you know. And then, you know, well, 30 more. And I got up to 6 months, and I couldn't believe that I had been sober for so long. And then I made it to a year, and that was incredible. I had never, since I was about 14, I don't think I'd ever been sober for a year, because I had always drank. And, you know, I was a daily drunk, and I was a bar drinker. And it was just impossible for me to do that. When I was about 2.5 years sober, my drinking caught up with me, and that is that I ran into a lot of physical problems. I lost a lot of my eyesight, and Clancy sponsored me at that time, and he was extremely kind to me, and I will never forget that, because I certainly needed that going through that. However, when I got better, I became one of many, and got a lot of resentments about that, you know. So I changed sponsors. But anyway, I had these eye problems, and, you know, I got an awful lot of help from this group, and I don't think I would have been sober if it wasn't for that. I had a lot of eye surgeries, and going into each one, my doctor would say, everything's fine, don't worry. And, you know, after the eye surgeries, he told me how lucky I was. And on second opinions that I got, they always told me how lucky I was. And, I stopped in time. That's all I can say. I also had a heart attack in that period. Like, my whole system just, you know, fell apart. And it was a very... Everybody was getting well in AA. Everybody was doing things and, you know, getting material things, getting jobs. And for the first time in my life, I was not only unemployed, but I was unemployable. And I couldn't see. Somebody in this group at that time, I started going to school. As a result of that, I ended up with 170 postgraduate credits, you know, which is a lot. Did that for a lot of years. And anyways, I lost my license for a while, and I, you know, got it back. But I'll be the last to leave, so, you know, you're all safe. After, it was very hard adjusting to the handicap, no matter how much help I got. There was something wrong with me again. I wasn't right. I had no job. I was on disability. And I had no self-worth. I mean, the only thing I had was AA. And my dad died, and I couldn't deal with that because I was very close to my dad. And now this is my experience. This doesn't happen to, you know, everybody, but I flipped out. I had a psychotic break and ended up drinking. I couldn't deal with reality. I'm a person for fantasy, and my reality just wasn't pleasant at all. I went crazy, and I drank. I went into a hospital after trying to commit suicide. I left the note when I woke up. It was a true attempt. I woke up and realized I hadn't left a note, and so I quickly wrote one thinking, oh, they got to know about this, you know. And they did, and, you know, so I was hospitalized. And it was a chemical imbalance, because one morning when I was on medication, and one morning I just woke up, and it was like I was really crazy. And I just... just drained all out. I came back immediately to AA. I called Evelyn, who stayed with me through that period of insanity, and just kind of let go of me when I went really crazy, and called her and said, you know, I'm okay. And she said, all right, you know, come on back. And it was very hard, but it was very easy, because it was hard because my ego was there. You know, I had had 9.5 years and I drank, you know. I had had 9.5 years and I went crazy, you know. And that was my ego. But the people made it very easy to come back. Maggie was a great help during that period of time, and I needed a close friend because I had dissociated myself with everyone. I couldn't live in the real world, and my fantasy life was the only thing I could deal with, and that became my reality. And when I would tell it to somebody, they'd say, Dee, no, sorry, but I think you've got the wrong idea here. And right away, I just cut the tie. Can't talk to you anymore. You don't believe my life, you know, what I'm thinking is true. And I backed off and, you know, went into my own world and went crazy. Today, when I first came back, I had no spiritual program at all. It took me about 1.5 years before I had any spiritual program. And I decided at one point that I needed, to do something about that. And so I slowly started to do the things by rote, what the 12 steps. I think it's the 11th step. You know, when you feel like you've lost contact, just keep, wait till it comes back. Well, I couldn't wait. I wanted it. And so I started working on that. And slowly over the years, the last couple of years, I went back to church on a regular basis. And I joined a very big church. And somebody from here, I took them to a to Mass on Sunday, and they said, this is big, just like the Pacific Group. You really like that stuff, don't you? And I said, yeah. I like a lot of people. I like a big crowd. I also got a job this time. My first sobriety was mostly physical and emotional illness. That's all I dealt with. I really didn't deal with work problems, relationship problems, men or women, whatever they were. I stopped going to school. I, you know, finished off with some eye surgeries, and once again I was very lucky, and I went to LA Unified and applied for a job, and they said you have to be willing to drive 50 miles, and I thought to myself, I can't do that, not with my eyesight, you know. And I just, you know, turned it over. If it's meant to be, it's meant to be. And a week after school started, I got a job 4 miles away from my home, and I have been working ever since. Working is very important to me as to who I am. I wish it wasn't like that, but, you know, my job is important to me. Also, the job has saved my life. I had all that time to think about myself and make myself crazy, and the kind of job I have working with teenagers, you cannot think about yourself 1 minute while you're in that classroom. They won't give you a chance, you know, and I love it, you know, I love it. It's to the point where I enjoy going into work. The first year was awful, you know. I had terrible control, and every time I went to close the door, I just wanted to walk right out and say, you know, bye, but not that way, you know. I have a life today like I didn't think I wanted this kind of life. I didn't want to be a teacher. I didn't want to be stable. I didn't want to be responsible or anything like that. And yet that is what I am today, and I'm very, you know, happy with that. I'm very close to my family. That was another thing that I got in sobriety, which I didn't think I would get, or didn't even think about. It wasn't important, but I have a relationship with my mother and my sister today and my other relatives I couldn't imagine anything any better. I also know how to get along with, you know, other people today. And I'm comfortable. Evelyn has a party every year. We have a party for her, and that's kind of like a gauge for me how I'm growing and how comfortable I am getting in sobriety. And I'm sober 6 years now, and that's another gift, because I know many people who drink and they don't make it back, and I have done that because of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, because of this group and people in this room, and because of the God that I'm hoping to learn to understand. Thank you.